Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. After experiencing what he described as debilitatingly itchy skin in 2009, former professional soccer player and Survivor Africa winner Ethan Zahn went from winning the ultimate prize on the popular reality show to taking on a rare form of Hodgkin lymphoma not once, but twice. But thanks to a regimen of intense treatments and two stem cell transplants from his brother, Zahn was declared cancer-free in 2013 and went on to return to the 40th season of Survivor earlier this year in the Winners at War competition. This week, we're talking with Zahn about how his time on Survivor helped him take on cancer multiple times and how he never lets a crisis go to waste. Welcome, Ethan. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here.
So let's just jump right in. So you were diagnosed with a form of Hodgkin's lymphoma at age 35 back in 2009. What was it like to hear the words, "You have cancer"?
Well, my only connection to cancer at that time was through my father. And so my father died of colorectal cancer when I was 14 years old. And so when I heard those three words, "you have cancer," I instantly just thought cancer equaled death. So I was completely afraid, frustrated, confused. And because I had been going through some symptoms for a while, about 4 months of wondering what was going on inside my body until I really figured out what was going on. And because my only presenting symptom for CD20 positive Hodgkin's lymphoma was really itchy skin, like debilitatingly itchy skin. So like I tried every pill, cream, potion, lotion known to man. And it wasn't until I found a swollen lymph node in my collarbone and then a 6 centimeter by 12 centimeter mass in my chest when I was diagnosed with this form of cancer.
Oh, that's terrible. So then once you got that diagnosis, what was treatment like?
Treatment for me, you know, like, I don't know, when I was first diagnosed, I'm not going to say I was excited, but I knew the only thing that would get rid of this darn itch was chemotherapy. So I was excited to get it going, figure out what was going on, and I actually do something about it. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was multiple rounds of chemotherapy. Then I had 22 blasts of radiation. And then they found a little bit of a regrowth. So then I went to a more powerful chemotherapy called ICE, which also didn't work. And so then I had to go on to get an autologous stem cell transplant, which was great because it got the disease into remission for a while. The cancer returned 20 months later. And I mean, getting the news that the cancer returned was deflating, exponentially more difficult than the first time around. But lucky for me, at that exact moment in time, just when I needed it the most, a new smart targeted therapy emerged on the market and was available for a select group of people in my exact situation. So I went on that drug, got my cancer into remission again, and I was able to go on and get my second stem cell transplant, this time using my brother Lee as the donor.
Two different stem cell treatment or transplants. What was that like? I mean, that those are, you know, impossible just thinking about one, but now two.
You know, for me, it was a very difficult process. It was painful. It was lonely. It was frightening. However, like I had a mindset of like, this is what I needed to do to get better. It's not like when a doctor tells you to do something or you'll die, you pretty much do it. There aren't too many choices when you're diagnosed with this type of protocol. So for me, I just had to do it and I had to set my mind. I had to accept the fact that this was going on so I could move on to the next phase, which is to map out how I wanted to live this next 6, 12, 18 months of my life. And so for me, knowing it was a curative process made it a little bit more easy to, you know, accept, I guess you could say. However, the actual, you know, for me, the recovery from these transplants, picking my life up after you're in remission, that's where life got difficult for me. But the actual transplants themselves is just kind of something I set my mind. I'm an athlete. I grew up as a competitive athlete. I'm a former professional soccer player. Like, so I like setting like goals and challenges for myself. Not that this is the one I chose for myself. However, you know, taking the attitude of an athlete and understanding that like, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. There's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end. And I looked at this like I was just training for the biggest game of my life. Mm-hmm. I literally got in shape to go into the stem cell transplant, if you can believe it. Mm-hmm. Mentally, physically, spiritually, I got in shape so I could go into the transplant because I knew the stronger I was going in, the stronger I would be going out.
Yeah. So then kind of touching on that a little bit, how did being a professional soccer player, how winning the third season of Survivor, how did that all kind of prepare you for cancer, would you say?
Exactly that, having a winning mentality. Also, you know, on the flip side is understanding how to fail or lose and still be able to pick yourself up to come back as a stronger, better person. Like, so as an athlete, like I'm a goalkeeper in soccer. So it's a pretty high pressure situation and position on the field of soccer. However, like you win some games, I could have the best game of my life and we lose and everyone hates me, you know, or I could have the best game of my life and everyone loves me. So like, I understand what it's like to lose and have to pick yourself up after that to be able to come back and perform at a high level again. So I took that kind of same attitude into my fight with cancer, where I know I'm going to have some ups, I'm going to have some downs, but over the long time, you know, I'll be a winner in this thing. And for me, that was a big part of it, to have that mentality of going into it.
That's great. So then what would you say was the hardest part of having cancer and how did you kind of overcome that?
The hardest part for me was kind of the recovery, the survivorship. And just being a young adult going through cancer was difficult. I think we have a whole host of problems or concerns that pediatrics and older, you know, cancer patients don't necessarily have to go through. Like pediatrics, you got your parents there, they're taking care of you. Great. Older, maybe you're married, you got health insurance, you got a job, you got a partner, things might be a little bit settled. But as a young adult, I was 35 years old, I survived this thing, and now all of a sudden, I got to live the rest of my life. Who's going to want to date me? Can I have kids? Am I going to lose my job? You know, I have bad health insurance. I'm different than all my friends. Like I press pause button on my life when all my other friends were just starting there, like kids, jobs, marriage, like adventures. Not for me at that time. So those host of like psychosocial issues that go through your mind as a young adult going through cancer was just debilitating for me. And the anxiety and the fear of relapse for me just was overwhelming and totally consumed my life. It was really difficult for me to come back from cancer.
Yeah. So then how do you kind of combat those challenges?
Well, I have a lot of processes in place. You know, one, I moved out of New York City to the middle of the woods in New Hampshire. That's where I'm calling in from right now. So I feel good about that. I got married. I got two little therapy cats, I like to call them. But, you know, I really tried to make a change in terms of, you know, they pumped me full of synthetics. You know, just to go to bed at night, I was taking anxiety, nausea, pain, sleep medicines. And then in the morning, I'd have to, you know, pop an Adderall just to get up and energy to go to the doctor. So living that cycle of it just consumed me and I wasn't living a life I was proud of. Mm. So I really tried to find out more, you know, to take some control over my own well-being. And for me, that looked like, you know, some meditation. I had, you know, I used more, you know, natural therapies that come from the earth. I talked to a shrink a lot. I leaned on the community around me and other cancer survivors who had been through a similar situation. I started talking with them and going to focus groups and doing all these incredible programs like First Descent, which is an outdoor adventure camp for young adult cancer survivors, Epic Experience, Stupid Cancer, you know, Twist Out Cancer. All these things really made me feel like not alone. And when you go through cancer, it's a really lonely feeling. I was never surrounded by so many people that love me more than anything in the world, but I felt so alone at that time. And I've learned that like nothing creates comfort and confidence more than knowing you're not alone when facing a life challenge. So I encourage anyone out there who is feeling sad or lonely or depressed or anything, like look to reach out to other people and connect with them. And if you gotta, you know, call up someone or go to a shrink, or there's organizations like Immerman Angels out there, which is like one-to-one peer-to-peer cancer support. That was a game changer for me. Just because I was a tough jockey guy. I didn't want to ask for help. I thought I could do it all myself, but that wasn't the case. I definitely needed help. And once I started having these open and honest conversations with the people that loved me the most, that wanted to take care of me, that's when it really became a better situation for me. Because often the thoughts and feelings and concerns that a cancer fighter is having are the same as those, the ones people taking care of that cancer fighter. But if you're never talking about it, you never know. Yeah. And so like everyone just wants to help each other and everyone's competing to like help each other. And if you don't know how you want to be helped and you can't tell people like what's best for you at this time, then I think it causes a couple of barriers there. Mm-hmm. So just have those conversations and I think it'll just smooth things out a little bit if you're struggling right now.
That's great. So then we touched on this a little bit earlier, but you went through a lot of chemotherapy, radiation, 2 stem cell treatments. That's a lot of aggressive treatment and there's a lot of isolation that goes with that. Did that experience, in your opinion, make this whole COVID-19 social distancing that we're, you know, slowly coming out of now, did that kind of make it a little bit easier for you or prepare you in any way?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've been preparing my whole life for this moment. You know, like 3 times on Survivor, like 260 days in isolation and like years of socially isolated because of the transplants. You know, this was the life I was living. No crowds, no public places, taxis, can't eat in restaurants, mask, gloves, everywhere you go. That's the life I lived. And it's interesting because as a cancer patient, I'm protecting myself from the world. And I'm educating people about what's going on with me to try to protect myself from everyone. I think the silver lining and what's going on right now with this pandemic is the fact that we are all going through the same thing at the same exact time in some, you know, shape. And so it gets back to that whole thing of just feeling isolated and alone. If you are feeling that, now is the perfect time to lean on the community. It's more now, more so than ever before. It's good to lean on community. And then the other part of that, I think, was for me, and we talked about this earlier again, is just acceptance. Like the first step to anything you can't control is acceptance. Because all the denial and this rush to be productive and get things online and take your yoga class and, you know, schools, you know, everything's so organized and prepared in our life. And we like to control things as human beings. But now we can't control anything. And feeling uncontrolled creates anxiety and uncertainty, and that stuff can cause destructive decisions. So living in denial is not a good place to be. Of course, I didn't want to like accept there was this cancer inside me trying to kill me, but I had to. I had to in order to move on to that next phase, which was, like I said, to map out how I want to live for the rest of this time. Mm-hmm. So I encourage everyone to just, you know, try to work on ways to accept what's going on, because then you can map out the next phase of your life, which was important for me.
Yeah. So now you touched on this a little bit in terms of, you know, encouraging people to kind of reach out and find that connection and find that support where they need it. Is there any other advice that you can offer somebody who might be, you know, experiencing a diagnosis of their own for the first time right now? What kind of advice would you have for somebody like that?
My advice for someone who's facing a recent diagnosis is to surround yourself with, you know, the family and friends that care for you the most. Be vulnerable and open enough to ask for and receive help as well. I think that's important. And then also to really figure out ways to connect with other people. And if you're not the type of person who's going to want to call up or talk to a shrink, like, you know, there are incredible programs. You know, everyone talks about being creative in isolation. I agree in a way where it's good to be creative, spark your mind in a different way, kind of helps pass the time in isolation. But in addition to that, it's a way to connect with other people. Like maybe you want to take an art class, or you want to learn how to meditate or take a yoga or whatever that may be. There are other people that are doing that right now. So it's a good way to just break down barriers, distract yourself from the reality of what's going on in your life right now, and connect with others in a way that might not be around cancer, that might make you feel a little bit comfortable, or could be around cancer as well. The other aspect of that for me, which was super helpful, was I kind of live by the saying these days to like never let a crisis go to waste, because it's an opportunity to do some really important things. So when I got my diagnosis, once I got myself a little bit settled and kind of protecting myself and what I needed to do to live my life, then I thought I could focus on other people, because focusing on the plight of other people helps you heal. And so here I was using my cancer nightmare, the worst thing that could possibly happen to me, to help others in the world. So I went public with my story. I give podcasts like with you. I'm doing stuff with Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So things like that really gave me a little bit sense and purpose of why this may be happening to me, if I can use this to do something good. And so like helping others get diagnosed earlier, help them manage their cancer care has been made it worthwhile for me to talk about my journey. And it just gets back to that whole situation. Like, let's try to make something good out of something really bad. And, you know, it helped, it made me feel good about myself, even in the middle of this horrible thing that's going on.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today, Ethan.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.